Want to hear a mostly true, laugh-out-loud account of a successful executive, single mother's search for love? You're going to love this one on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, as always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. Author and executive Madeline Morgan is with us today, and I'm curious. You got a straight, no chaser style of delivering advice. What's the toughest piece of advice you've ever given?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I would say when people are stuck in relationships that aren't working for them, there's actually a story in the book about my friend who was in this relationship and she didn't recognize that it wasn't working. And I had to sit her down and say, you got to move on. Let it go. Forget it. And people get very upset because they don't want to hear that. They want me to tell them it's going to be fine. Oh, it's just temporary. So it's hard to watch people cry.
Mm. Well, you realize.
When you lay it out for them.
You do realize you can't just say there's a story in the book. You got to give us the story.
Oh. I'm looking at Nancy like, oh, you know, I don't have to elaborate. Well, I just told
See,
it.
See, that's what happens when you don't read the book. See, like me.
That's
Nancy
right.
read the book.
She did.
And so you could talk to her like that, but when
right.
you look at
I
me.
I have to look at you and tell you. Okay.
I'm looking like, I don't know listener. What you're talking about.
There is a story in the book where I flat out told my friend Amy, who mm-hmm. was very upset about this guy who she had been dating, mm-hmm. and he just started to back off after, I don't know, they had been dating maybe like 4 or 5 months and then really intense, and then he started to back off. It happens to everyone. Right. Everybody's been there, and you know, you look to people to help you through it. And we were in the office, we worked together, we were in like the office cafeteria, and I was like, Amy, he's, you know, you gotta let it go.
Get
just,
over it.
He's not into you anymore. You gotta move on. Stop mm-hmm. talking about it, stop obsessing. Concentrate on your work, like just, you know, forget about it. He's over it, or just get over it, or, you know, something harsh. I don't know. It was kind of harsh, maybe. It wasn't uh-huh. so gentle. Uh-huh. And I made her cry in the office cafeteria, and I felt bad. But years later, she thanked me for that moment because she was like, that was very upsetting, but it was like a wake-up call and a turning point for me. Mm-hmm. So there's a happy ending. She's married with a couple of kids, and okay. that was a tough one.
You realize just saying she's married with a couple of kids doesn't. It's not synonymous.
You're right, 100%. Let me rephrase. She's happily married and with two lovely children and a lovely husband, and she's very happy now.
Gotcha. Yeah.
There
all
you
right.
go.
All
Is
right.
that better?
Right. That's
yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, all right. Enough about her and
yeah.
you. I want to know about you and somebody else. So tell me a story about you, sex, and men.
Oh, come on. That's what the whole book is about.
All right, well, give me one. That is not hard if that's what the whole book is about.
Oh, my God. Maybe we should ask Nancy to pick her favorite and I'll tell that story.
We could do that.
Well, let me just explain. The book isn't just about me having sex with men, because that is what the book is largely based around, except that, you know, it is a memoir. So, you know, there are stories about why uh-huh. I'm doing that and
why you're having sex with
men. Well, you know, like, what's the purpose? What's going on in my life that's leading me to behave that way? Uh-huh. You know, it's easy to laugh about it and just, you know, be like, oh, my God, she's such a slut. But, you know, there's if you read the story, you'll see, like, I kind of went through some hard times. I was trying uh-huh. to figure stuff out.
Right.
You know, it's not just cut and dried, like, I okay. like to have sex.
Well, you know what I think is still radically unfair?
Tell me.
Is that you could... that you can express yourself sexually with the quality of liberation that you do, and that the inclination to refer to that as slutty
yeah,
behavior
right.
is still ever present in our
You're right.
culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wish I had listened to it again before I came in today, because I was reminded of a website I went to for a, I'm not sure what he calls himself, but he's committed to healing women, and he uses sexual energy to do that. His name is Nityama, right? So on his website, when you click on, this audio kicks in, and it starts talking about how women were free to be with whomever they wanted to be sexually in antiquity, mm-hmm. and that they had children, and the whole community mm-hmm. raised the children, and there was never any discussion called, whose baby is this? And so, and but as men began to query what happens to them after they die, and where do all their possessions go after they die? Like, who's going to get what? Mm-hmm. They started getting into what's mine and what's not mine, mm-hmm. down to the children. And then, of course, by extension, the wife. And so he, Nityama, essentially.
How do you spell that? Because I got to Google that and sure. check it out.
Sure. It's, what the hell the heck do you spell? Nityama.
Great.
Nityama.
Okay.
Yeah, Nityama is how it's spelled. And I just happen to always say Nityama. But yeah, so, and he talks about how essentially men sold women on a box, mm-hmm. which is just a house, and her own children in exchange for security.
Yeah.
You know, and there went their ability to kind of roam free,
yeah,
as they
live
pleased.
Communally, yeah,
yeah, yeah, live,
yeah, and yeah. also, you know, I mean, I hate to get so heavy about it, but you know, even it, again, like in antiquity, men would sleep with men, women can sleep with women. It was like a free for all, yeah. and until religion showed up, mm. all of that was, you know, fair game.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I mean, I joke when I say like, oh, she's such a slut. Because you know it's
because you
it's
know
funny
it's,
and you can
and
make
you know,
you know
it's in the at least in the it's, recesses of the average person's mind.
Yeah, and
like,
in the
what
forefront
else you call
of
this?
A lot of people's yeah. mind too. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a it's a thing that's in the grand scheme of humanity. It's only been you know maybe I don't even know, but we haven't been this kind of rigid society forever, and
no.
things have been much more fluid.
Right.
So, you know, maybe I'm living a past life or somehow, like, I don't really care. But yeah, that's,
you're
you know,
bringing
you guys,
sexy back, Madeline.
Yeah, that's my job.
In a historical kind of way.
Well, the question that I'm left to ask
yes.
is, why do you think the landscape was open for religion to come in and interject those different whatever you want to call them?
I don't know. I think maybe, who knows, power.
Religion is generally
power
run by
power,
men also.
Power, money, control,
yeah.
you know, people,
absolutely.
You know, people have big egos and, you know, like you said, all of a sudden somebody went, hey, where's my stuff? What's my stuff going to, you know,
yeah.
that's all it is. It's like my stuff. That's happening today.
Keep in mind, sex is a very powerful energy.
Right.
And it's incredibly liberating.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to control a people, you have to put a clamp on their sexual expression.
Mm.
Period.
Okay.
Well, I unclamped myself.
Jeez, uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you talked about some difficult times you were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back. Let's back as far as you can remember where this is relevant. And what you got?
Well, that's really where the book starts in mm-hmm. terms of my story. The book itself is really probably only 2 years of time.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot has happened in those 2 years. But in the very beginning, I explain a little bit of my backstory, but I didn't want the book to be all about all this other stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like my career and my marriage. You know, maybe that's the next book I can tell, the, you know, the prequel.
Mm-hmm.
But the book itself is just a short period of time where I was, like I explained, I was trying to sort of find myself and figure out where I am in this life. But the stuff that had happened prior to that moment was that I had been in a happy marriage for, I think it was about an 8-year marriage. And I explained how that ended. And,
it was an 8-year marriage.
Mm-hmm.
How many of the years were happy?
All of them.
Okay.
All of them. That made it such a cage rattle. Right, exactly.
Right.
That was why it was such a major upheaval for me, because it, you know, up until the, you know, until he walked out the door, I was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
So, I was happy.
He might not have been.
Obviously.
Okay.
But that's a whole other story. But I don't tell that story, and that's not even the point, you know. But
right.
He was not happy. He had to go look for whatever it was he was looking for. Mm-hmm. I think he's still looking, mm-hmm. which, you know, now we're great friends, and he's the father of my daughter, and he's a great dad, and that's all fine. Mm-hmm. But so that happened
and
very
suddenly.
And
daughter is how old?
She is now 14.
Okay.
So that happened, and within the six-month period of him walking out the door, my mother died, my sister died, and I had my job, you know, a totally new job that I was starting. Not mm-hmm. that was a hard thing, but it was just like that's a lot to go through in mm-hmm. a six-month period of time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I literally, like, I also sort of saw the humor in that later, mm-hmm. like bullet pointing those things, which I do in the beginning of the book, which is like, I know it's weird to just put, like, here are the things that happened to me. Death, divorce, you know.
New job.
Like, a new job. And so now that that's over, let's talk about where we are today. So not to make, you know, light of it or to be flip about it, but I just didn't want to dwell on that. The book is supposed to be funny. It's supposed to make you laugh and smile. And if you get a tear every once in a while, because then there was another death.
Oh, right.
Yeah. My friend and neighbor. Mm-hmm. But you have to approach it all with humor, and that was what I attempted to do.
Well, like the listeners, I'm looking to be happy and laugh and smile.
Yes. Okay,
so,
good.
So shoot, that. What you got?
I got a book, and it's supposedly it's funny because people that I talk to laugh. Nancy told me she was listening to the audiobook.
Oh, listen.
What made you laugh?
So... Here was the thing that made my office laugh because they got in on it first. So
oh my God, you played it for your office?
No, I was messing around with my headphones. So instead of plugging the headphones into my phone where the book was, I plugged it into my laptop and then I hit play on the phone.
Oops.
And so when I hit play on the phone, you're talking about Chloe's last cock, right? And so
we need to explain hashtag Chloe's last cock.
And you start talking about sex toys. Now this is now on blast audio. All sorts of assorted sex toys, and everybody's like, "Whoa, Nancy!"
He
had no idea, and I was like,
"Oh wait, you guys don't understand. I don't know what you're talking about. Chloe's last cock."
Hashtag Chloe's last hashtag was the hashtag that we made up for my best friend Chloe's bachelorette party.
Yes.
And so I told, you know, I told the story of
the party.
Yeah, the bachelorette party and what girls normally do at a bachelorette party. We had the stripper, we had the assortment of sex toys, and that was like the moment that you had. That's hilarious.
Yes.
So I listed all the sex toys.
Uh-huh. Now when you do this at a bachelorette party, what do you do with the sex
it's
toys?
Just a
you
just joke.
Give them.
That's
you
the
just
whole
give
point.
Them to each person.
Well, that's the whole point of the story was that it was just, well, we give it to her, the bride,
right.
You know.
Okay.
Right.
And
as a send off.
Yeah, exactly. Here you go.
Okay.
But the whole point is that it's, you know, even that is a joke. So
right.
Yeah.
Right. It's part of the fun.
Did you guys know where your mom's toys were when you were growing up?
Oh my God! There's a story about that in the book too, where I think that my daughter snooped.
And found your
and
toys.
And may have found my toys.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I...
To my knowledge...
I didn't.
My mom didn't have any toys.
Yeah,
to
my mom,
knowledge, mm-hmm. I never discovered any.
Okay.
I feel like there are five children in my family. Two are twins, so I feel like my parents had sex four times.
Oh,
you
man.
Know, it's like, you know, Italian Catholic household, you know.
That
nobody's
procreative,
sex. Yeah, yeah,
perfunctory.
It's a whole different vibe.
Yeah.
And what's you all's take on sex toys, as women?
Well, you know,
particularly the type women use.
Oh, those are fantastic, Frank. What do you think? How much detail do you want?
As much as you got.
I got a lot, but I don't know that. That's why. Are we really talking about that? All right. There are. They're an assortment. You know, there's, again, I talk about it in the book as a, again, it's a silly thing, but, you know, there's a couple of assorted sizes and colors of things that I have in my repertoire of toys. And I think my daughter may have snooped and found one or two or three of them.
And you haven't had the follow-up conversation, baby girl, did you?
No.
Well, an investigation was conducted, and it was found inconclusive.
Yes, thank you very much. I could not have phrased it better myself. And I moved them all now. They're in a different... Now that drawer is completely empty. So if she were to open it, She I was going to put a big sign in the drawer that said, like, hi, Imogen, you know, in the next drawer that's empty. Go do your homework.
Right.
But, yeah, those drawers are empty now.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, the show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young.
I love that.
It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and then via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Hi, Frank.
Hello, the consummate generalist.
Indeed.
In the house. Today's guest is an executive that has some of the most fascinating dating and sex stories imaginable. And she's written a book all about it. It includes lustful promiscuity. It's racy, raw, sometimes vulgar, and always hilarious. So, if you, like me, want to know how writing such a tell-all book impacted her social circle, whether promiscuity has been satisfying, and her thoughts on marriage, monogamy, and polyamory, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with the mom that many would like to and the author of Mad About Men, a memoir. That's M-E-N-M-O-I-R. M-E-N-dash.
Yeah, get the pun. Yes, memoir, yes, memoir. Yes. Yeah, I'm funny.
Madeline Morgan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Before we get too deep in today's subject matter, which is already happened.
We got pretty deep.
Yeah. I want to check in to see what's going on in the news or the world, whatever, about relationships. Madeline, please don't be bashful. We want your thoughts.
I have three.
I'm listening. Go.
But let's start with one that sort of plays into what we had been talking about.
Okay.
Have you guys heard about this story where the soccer player from Ghana won the man of the match, you know, like the soccer game, star of the game or whatever?
So
have
like
you heard
MVP?
About this guy?
Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Okay. I was like, what is that called?
You're not a sports fan, clearly.
You know, I'm a hockey fan, so for me, it's the top three stars of the game or like the number one star of the game. But yes, the MVP.
I said sports.
Oh, wow.
He is not a sport.
God.
Oh, Frank.
Ouch.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Bad.
Onward.
Bad boy.
Onward. All right. So there's a soccer player from Ghana who plays for South Africa's Free State Stars football, I guess they call it, right?
Okay.
So he won the man of the match game for the game. And he was
we
thanking.
We cannot call it man of the match.
Well, it's South Africa.
That's what
it's
they
not.
Call
that's
it.
What they call it.
Okay.
So we can.
So I can't call it MVP because that's not what I call. But you get the point.
Got
so
it.
His name is Mohamed Anas, and he was thanking. You know, he was doing his post game interview, and I have an audio clip. Maybe I can get it for you later. But he basically, I wish I could play it for you.
You
can I play it?
Yeah.
No, well, tell us the story.
It's funnier if you hear him. Hold on.
Okay.
Let me just turn the volume really up. It's
okay. Jeff is handing you a
listen.
One of this, and I got it. So thank you very much for this, for giving me this, and I appreciate my fans also, my wife and my girlfriend. I mean my wife. Yeah, sorry to say, I'm sorry.
My wife and my girlfriend. He thanked his wife and his girlfriend.
Sorry. Then he backs up. Sorry to say.
And then he backs up and he was like, I love you. I could play, you know, I'll give it to you later. You could Google it. But he back, you know, he catches him. He's like, oh, I'm sorry to say, my wife. And then
Oh my
But y'all don't. I mean, number one, I just did a little kind of a celebratory dance that somebody would say something.
You know what?
Like that.
So did I, Frank. I was like, yes, because this goes
real.
Right back to what we were talking
yes.
about. But then, you know, he feels like he has to backtrack. Mm-hmm. Denies
because his
having,
wife doesn't
yeah, his
know
wife
about the
doesn't,
girlfriend.
His wife of 7 years doesn't know about the
Maybe
girlfriend.
Maybe that's not true.
Maybe it's not true.
Why
Maybe
apologize?
Well, okay.
Well, you could listen to the rest of the clip. He's like, I'm so sorry. I love you so much. And then later on, he made a statement, which is even more bizarre, apologizing, saying that he calls his, he refers to his daughter
what?
As his girlfriend.
No.
I thought it was his wife. His daughter. So he's like, everybody in my family knows that I call my daughter my girlfriend. And that's what I was talking about. I don't have a girlfriend.
Well,
right. But I was like, oh, dude, Too you late. Do. You're from Ghana Too and late. You're a soccer player and you look late. Like that. You
yeah.
have a wife and a girlfriend. It's
yeah.
okay.
It's okay.
It's cool with me. It's cool.
Okay
I was like,
you.
Would you like another girlfriend?
Okay. All right. All right. So a few things. One, when he said my wife and my girlfriend, he could have been talking about the same person. You could call
well,
your wife your girlfriend.
Well, that's funny that you say that because I do have a friend who did refer to his wife as he used to say, my wife, my girlfriend. He said, I want her to always feel like my girlfriend.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah.
But he backtracked and, you know, obviously there's
right.
two people. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been.
He
wouldn't
have had
to backtrack
to apologize.
And apologize.
Right. Uh-huh. Right.
And the issue may not be that his wife doesn't know if there's a girlfriend.
The girlfriend may not know there's a wife.
Oh, the girlfriend always knows there's a wife.
No. The issue, and that's an interesting, that's a whole nother interesting
yes.
conversation,
Ball
I believe. That,
oh, there's a story about that in the book, too. But don't ask me to tell it now. Keep going.
The fascinating thing about the girlfriend-wife dynamic
right.
is that in many ways, the girlfriend knows the guy better than the wife in certain ways.
She just knows you know, a different version.
She knows
it.
A different
yeah.
version, but she knows a, in some ways.
You think a truer version?
Well, there, if the wife doesn't know about the girlfriend, then she knows something about, so the girlfriend knows something about the guy that the wife doesn't know about
mm-hmm.
the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a landscape, that's a communication piece to me. That's one of those things where if you really want to have very open and complete communication, you got to be able to hear that kind of stuff and not just leave it to the girlfriend to be able to hear. So I find
but
that.
Are men really interested in their wives having that experience of them? Like I'm thinking about years ago, I used to work on the trading floor in Chicago. So, I mean, literally, it was
How
a sea
did
of
you never
people.
Tell me this story about working
me.
On the trading floor in Chicago.
I did. I worked for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. In the futures pit, and trust me, it was a sea of testosterone.
See, you think you guys know each other and you have this great relationship,
I
but
don't
see,
think
you're
that.
Learning things about each other all the time.
I don't,
oh, you don't, think
I don't even like her.
Truest thing he said in a year.
Right, so.
I thought the trading floor was a strip club.
Oh my God, no. Well, you know, I can't speak to that. I kept my skivvies on, Jeff. I'm just saying it was like men everywhere.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I had a friend who was also a trader. So I got some of the interior dialogue, right? So he talked about there were men who would, as a matter of fact, he talked about one specific guy. They were talking about oral sex. And the guy had a girlfriend, so he could have oral sex because he said he would absolutely not do that with his wife. Mm. He just thought that his wife was above that in his own mind.
Yep.
In his mind, he didn't want his wife to do that with him. So he need, but he needed to have it, obviously. So
Hello.
He had to have a girlfriend.
That's the mouth that kisses my kids.
There
yeah,
you go.
Right.
There you go.
Wow.
And he may have actually said something to that effect.
Huh.
Does that mean he can't tell his wife
His
about...
wife does not know about the girlfriend.
Okay, but that's two different things.
No, you're absolutely right. But his wife does not know about the girlfriend. Because
the girlfriend knows about the
girlfriend
wife.
The girlfriend knows about the wife.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how it might work or can work.
Got,
but
that's
well,
how
work
it works for some people. Okay.
Yeah,
that's how it
in
yeah.
most scenarios.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's why it works is what I meant to say.
There you go.
All right. Okay. What else you got? You done
expose
the guy from the Ghana from the Ghana soccer team.
I didn't expose it. He did it himself. He became like himself. An internet superstar because
right.
of this.
It went viral, right?
It definitely did.
I'm pretty sure.
This poor guy was like, why am I so famous?
I doubt my listeners were aware of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I certainly wasn't.
All right. I didn't know about that. So I'm happy that I didn't know about it because it's fresh.
So I don't, you know, these are just things that I happen to have prepared. They don't necessarily have to do with what we're talking about today, but... There is, because I do this show on 98 Rock in Baltimore.
Yes.
It's a segment called Mad About Men, on Wednesdays at 5:30.
Awesome.
And the, one of the topics that we had been talking about were, that politics has been tearing apart relationships because it's such a volatile subject and it's so
polarizing.
Everybody is very passionate about it one way or the other. So, we're seeing it on Facebook and it's not necessarily, couples. But it's about your friendships. And, you know, Facebook friends unfriending each other.
Right.
Because they're, you know,
so not
pontificating.
Necessarily not necessarily. Romantic
relationship. It could be too. It's both. Mm-hmm. You know, like, do you, like, what if you're, you know, partners living together and one person is a Trump supporter and one person is not? And how do you live under the same roof? Because it's, you know, it's not just like, in the past, things haven't been quite so polarizing, to use your word. You know, it's
Can
it's
you
difficult.
Imagine being in a household and saying, you're one of the people who put that? Oh, man.
I
mean, I guess you can just not discuss it. You have to make a pact not to discuss it at home because that's going to be a problem for everyone. You know, maybe you just refrain completely. And if you're going to watch the press conference, you know, go in the other room, use the other TV, put on your headphones and use your computer. I don't know.
A running joke at work is, how did you vote?
I don't even want to know.
Wait a minute.
I don't want to start those conversations.
And the thing I think is so comical is that a lot of times the person will say, I didn't participate. Which I'm thinking, come on now. Everybody couldn't have not participated or we wouldn't have had an election. So it's interesting. If the person is acting particularly bizarre, the next question
or
is,
quiet.
How did you vote, right?
But we see it's, people are arguing and fighting and breaking up and losing friends on Facebook. And it's, you know.
Right.
So if you live together and you go to separate parts of the residence, each one of y'all may very well just go to Facebook and start blasting whatever your beliefs are. And, you know, it still could be some controversy or problem or that sort of thing.
Yeah, but, you know, people are unfriending each other too on Facebook.
Big time.
I guess I've never thought about that as it pertains to my wife because, I mean, our political ideologies are aligned.
Mm. Yeah, so you're not having the issue.
Right.
But if you were in a house where one of you went one way and the other went the other way. Mm-hmm. You're right. You have to agree to just leave it alone.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
Yeah.
You said you got three. So what else you got?
Well, there was a recent study, scientific study, that proved that brain activity after drug use, like if you're a drug addict, is the similar brain activity to like my friend Amy, who when you break up with someone and you like crave, you miss someone really bad. Or you know how when people break up with each other, they do crazy things like, you know, drunk text, or I can't refrain from calling and saying I miss you, or you send an email, or, you know, you like press send and you're like, oh, why did I do that? So that behavior, it stems from the same part of your brain as a drug addiction. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting.
They did like an MRI and they conducted all this like the scientific.
Because they say the orgasm comes from the same area of the brain
as what?
That place where you say, oh God, when you're orgasming is this place, the same place in the brain as the place of religious experience.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why you say, oh God?
No, that may not be why you say, oh God, but it's rather ironic that it is from the same center of the brain. Oh, well, let me tell you something totally like, I can't say not related because I really do think sex and money are related, but.
Well, that's a story by itself.
That's a whole other show, right? But I also learned not too long ago that When you spend money, the center of your brain that you actually feel when you use cash, you feel it in the same center of your brain that you feel pain. Oh.
And when you use credit cards,
there's no register in the brain at all. It's nothing. So you just, so it's sort of almost like a mindless transaction. And it is, studies show at least that people spend what, maybe 10, 20% more money if they're using their credit card than if they spend cash. Mm-hmm. And when I think of, I was like, well, because if you were taking your money out, all of a sudden you're like, do I really want that?
Right. But what about for kids today who grow up and cash is used so much less? So that for us is like a...
And the idea of
the connection
money.
That we have is societal and the way that we grew up because it was, you know, cash.
Right.
But, you know, kids now barely even carry cash. They, you know, everything is automated or, you know,
even
you don't even
Monopoly
have credit cards.
Monopoly is now cards.
Is it?
Really? Yes.
It is.
They can't even figure out how you use a card to play Monopoly.
Have you seen it? Do you know that's real?
I have not. I should. I'll retract the statement until I'm back here next week to say, yes, it's true. Maybe I'll even buy you a game, Frank, which could be at your peril if you take it home and your kids start using cards to play Monopoly.
My kids will not beat me in Monopoly. I am not.
Cards or no cards, right? Oh, my goodness.
Now, tie that into sex. How do you?
Well, it's my... I can't say it's my theory like I thought of it. However, sex and money, if you believe in the chakra system, are governed by the same chakra. And so I believe that there is definitely a correlation between how people operate sexually and how they operate financially. And I personally feel that you can get a better read on the quality of human being a man is if you deal with him financially and spare yourself the agony, really, of dealing with him sexually.
What?
Now, how would you do that?
Well,
go to dinner and see if he buys? Or what?
Well, that becomes the tricky part. So, number one, it takes longer.
Yeah.
So, which builds a certain intensity, right? And you don't have to... Well, you've had what you certainly know yourself. Wait a minute. This notion of you go to dinner with a guy, and a lot of women will pay attention to whether or not he tips the waitress and how. Mm-hmm. How he is with it. You even mentioned in your book.
I did. I mentioned it in the book that one of the guys that I dated was rude to. Well, I mean, it wasn't about tipping necessarily.
No,
but
it wasn't.
Just it was
but
about,
he was
like,
rude to servant to the servant class, what he perceived servers. To be servers. Yes.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is that was like a that's a big red flag for me, and I didn't heed it at the time. But
there you go.
You know, and looking in retrospect, that's not that's not a person that you want to be with.
Well,
also heard a guy say at some workshop I did a gazillion years ago. He says, "Listen, men invest. So if a man is not willing, this is just could get so freaking dicey for women, but if a man is not willing to invest his time, his money, his resources with you, he's not interested."
Okay.
You know
that
what
makes
stood
a lot of
my
sense.
You know what stood my hair up when the Tiger Woods debacle came down? One of the women that was dealing with it. So there was one woman that he was obviously quite into. And then, and what did she say? Gave her money all the time. There was one girl who said he never gave her a dime. And one time she asked him for $100 and he told her he didn't have it.
I love it. I love it.
Don't get me on this. Don't lock me in a library and have me have to do this study. I was like, what? I was blown.
I mean, he just didn't
don't
have the
start,
cash.
Frank. Oh, don't start, Frank.
He didn't have the cash.
Don't start with me, Frank. Ooh. No.
Ooh, that doesn't work. And I mean, he didn't need to have the cash.
The woman asked him for $100. You don't hear me. $100.
I see the eyes blinking and I hear you.
And he told her, I don't have it. I can't do it. He couldn't give it to her.
So, okay, what's the point?
So it just, well, that for me tied in directly to the level of engagement he felt with her.
The point is, he was willing.
Yeah. He was willing to have sex with her, but she hadn't taken the time. And oftentimes, you know, which goes back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, this dynamic of women and sex and the whole thing of sex first, like dessert first, right? So sex first, like dessert first is cool. However, I have become curious about who really needs the time in the relationship. So I'm beginning to think that the woman needs to take her time so that the guy can figure out where he stands. And then you can figure it out too. And then you don't need to like jump into bed or into life with a guy who really doesn't have your intelligent best interest at heart.
How does that work? Your intelligent best interest. You are having sex. You're having sex with him because you want to have sex with him.
That's the thing.
Yeah. He's having sex with you.
Oftentimes, the woman is having sex with the man because she wants something deeper from him. The man is having sex with the woman from a completely different vantage point.
Well, sometimes a woman was having sex with a man because she wants to have sex with the man.
Right.
And then, you know.
When is that not the case?
Plenty. You're right.
I'm listening.
So. In the book, again, let's bring it back to Mad About Men.
Okay.
One of my philosophies was that I would sleep with a man first, you know, or early on in the relationship, relationship in air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not compatible there and if it doesn't do it for you there, why waste any more time? Mm-hmm. But what if someone was engaging and lovely and bought dinner and, you know, and you spend all this time.
It's
generous and you're examining this financial outlook and then you decide to have sex with them months later and it's not good or it just doesn't do it for you and you can't get past it. That's not a whole bunch of wasted time.
You enjoyed yourself. You had good dinner and you
I
went out.
Good dinner. I don't need somebody to give me good dinner.
All of the things you
I know what you're
explore
saying.
Yeah. Human
all
being.
Right. So I had a nice time. But I don't know. To me, it's just.
A lot of that is cultural and emotional because there are women who cannot act the way you did because they need an emotional attachment in order to open up physically.
Thank you, Jeff.
And they would sacrifice enjoyable sex for compatibility,
emotional
a nice
connection.
Dinner, an emotional
and a
connection.
Nice dinner. Yeah,
and there's an entire couple of generations that have done that, you know, right. And you might call the women repressed because of it. People are a lot freer now, you know, for your mind and for your ass and all of that stuff. But what Madeline just said makes a whole lot of sense. Because you're cutting through a couple of different layers of what could potentially break up a real relationship.
Right, and at least right. for me and my perspective, and again, it isn't for everybody, and I recognize right. that, but, you know, I'm a little bit older. I've already been through all that and done all that, and, you know, if it's not working on all levels instantly, let's go, because I'm, you know,
you're busy.
I have a whole lot of time. Yeah, I'm busy, but also, you know, I'm no spring chicken.
So what's instant? Okay, Nancy, you mentioned the financial scenario, and you said it takes time to get to know a man.
Doesn't
on
take
the
a
finance.
Lot of time.
I'm just saying what you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, you. No, I'm saying it does take time. Meaning you may not be able to make that discovery on the first date. Say. Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, of course.
Right.
Why don't you just ask him to bring his bank statement or credit statement?
Because that's not the point. It's not just about how much he's sitting on. It's about how much he can share.
Right.
And whether he's generous or thoughtful, and you know, it's not just about the.
But it's not just Dollar. About it, but you can get a snapshot. You tell them to bring your bank statement.
Yeah, that'll go over really report. Well. That'll be a fantastic way to open a date.
Hey, there's an absurdity to all of it.
That's true, but at least some of it is rooted in reality.
Yes.
That is not.
Yes.
When does sex become, I want to say, introducible?
A mutual exchange? Yeah, like?
When do you have sex? If you're interested in a guy.
That's different for everyone.
Right.
Okay.
There was some survey about like 3.2 dates or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think it also has a lot to do with your intentions.
Right.
His and yours.
Yep.
Because a lot of times the guy wants something deeper and the woman doesn't. You know, and so men can just as easily as women, maybe not as often, get caught up in this situation where the guy is pulling out all the stops because he likes this woman and he wants to see where this thing can go, and she just wants to be bedded.
Right.
So tell us about you, Mancy.
Thank you for it. Sir. He
is a trap. What about flipping the script? Have either of you ever been the more successful in terms of financial, on a financial level, than someone you might be dating?
That's the story of my life, Jeff. I think that I need to examine that part of myself and figure out why it is that I end up with, you know, why I'm always the breadwinner.
With the exception of MD, right?
Exactly. MD is the code word. I love that you know that. For medical doctor in the book, who I dated. For 5 years, actually, and it was a refreshing change from all of the starving artist types and the one that I married, you know. So I had this five-year relationship with MD, with the medical doctor, but can I say what it is on the, I don't know how clean your show is, but the nickname really was Major Dick. So I called him MD because it was funny, because a medical doctor, but he was a Major Dick. But he was loaded, and it was a real refreshing change for me, but it just was, you know, and he was very generous. And in fact, you like my Cartier? That was a gift from him.
Mm, I was going to say, is this the? No, that's not the ring you bought yourself.
No, this is not. No, that's no. That doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, he bought me a ring. He bought me a watch, another watch, a necklace. You know, he was very, very generous. We went on trips. He paid for it. So he was really, really generous, and he was truly, you know, I mean, Major Dick is funny, but you know, he was a good guy. Mm-hmm. But that was my only relationship where somebody was other than, you know, was the breadwinner other than me.
And so were you cautious, or are you cautious about those who might be after you for the money or a more comfortable financial
situation? I don't think anybody's
situation?
After me for the money. I really don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think it's like that.
Because I know men are, and I know successful women are as well. Are you, you know, I've never had a
situation where someone was with me because I felt like they were after my money or they wanted to take advantage of my situation. I never felt that. Never felt taken advantage of.
Yeah, that didn't come across in the book either.
No, that wasn't ever. It was just, you know, I just happened to be attracted to the artist type because, you know, a lot of times they're creative and they're free thinkers and they're not so buttoned up. And, you know, it just, I don't think that it has really anything to do with money or financial status. I think it has to do with the mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a creative person, sometimes, you know, you don't have a regular steady job with health insurance and a 401k. You are a writer, a composer, a musician, an act, you know, whatever.
Well, you
and
know,
that's tough to make a living that way. So I really think that's more about.
To your credit, though, the way you manage your lifestyle because you have a daughter probably was a great protection against some of maybe the men that Jeff is talking about.
Oh, that's true. But even before the daughter came along, I think. But that's a great point. You know, you can't get in. There's a little fortress around my life that, you know, involves my daughter. So yeah, it's tough to knock through that wall. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me as though there's a part of you that feels as though you used to be involved with starving artists or broke artists to some degree. I don't know if you were involved with successful artists also. But that there was kind of a what the hell? Why am I always with starving artists? But do you believe that you were attracted to artists and that was a good thing? Or that you were attracted to them being kind of just esoteric or broke?
Esoteric or broke?
Definitely not B. Right. Definitely not attracted to anyone who is broke. I don't know. I was just trying to explain why I rarely am attracted, or why, you know, I don't know how to even answer that.
I'm wondering if it's about a certain turn of mind.
Either that, or is it just the type of person that you're attracted to?
Right.
Yeah. Like, I have banker friends? Mm. I don't. Do you have a banker friend? Well, you were in the.
I used to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really. Maybe that's not the best example. I don't know. I just, you know, you run in circles of creative. I do. Mm-hmm. I run in circles of creative people. So I don't think it's so consciously like I like. you know, a scruffy, broke artist. It's not, you know, it's just that who you, you know, who you're attracted
to. Yeah.
In your circle and in your mindset.
Mm-hmm. I've got another issue.
Okay.
So we went through your three. I think we may have got a Nancy issue. I've got one. I was reading an article yesterday about how to treat a cab driver according to the cab driver. So cab drivers don't include just cab drivers, but also Uber and Lyft.
Yeah.
All right. You guys ready?
I need to know this because I live in New York and that's all we do.
Cab
is
heaven.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
this could have ramifications on your romantic relationship and your relationship with cabbies.
Mm.
Okay. So, all right. Try not to have sex or eat in the back of the car for starters.
this is the cabbie talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, good. Okay. Check. Neither of which I've ever done.
Okay.
Well, maybe I ate, but not like a full meal.
Right.
Don't keep us waiting.
Oh, don't keep the cabbie waiting.
Right.
It keeps the meter running.
Yeah, what's the? What do you mean?
What's the problem?
You call the cab or the Uber, and if the Uber doesn't have to wait for you, they can bounce after 4 minutes, I think, or whatever.
Well, what he was saying was there's after I think it was 5 minutes.
5 minutes, yeah.
They could be picking someone else up in a pool,
yeah.
Or you know, and they could miss out
so
on
go
passengers
ahead.
A pool if you have us waiting for longer than 5 minutes.
But they're permitted to leave after 5 minutes.
Okay. I'm just telling you
but
what
all right,
the answer
yeah.
is.
Okay.
All right, all right.
All right, go ahead.
Stop slamming our doors.
Mm. Yeah.
Everybody, consider, you know, that's cool.
Yeah, all right. I got right. nothing for that.
Okay.
We see a lot of weird SHI.
Okay.
All right. He said, I had a drunk couple ask me if I could pull over so they could have sex without falling around when I made turns.
Oh, my gosh.
I asked if they really couldn't wait. And the dude handed me a $50 bill.
That's all?
So I did
it's worth it. More. Really? I would have been like, you got another one of those?
Oh, my God.
I put in my headphones until they were done.
No.
And now every time I hear Drake, I get flashbacks to those long 5 minutes. It was an easy $50, though.
Long five minutes. No wonder he didn't want to get a hotel.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
It was cheaper.
He didn't have enough time.
And this was a female cab driver.
He couldn't keep the fun going.
They gave that example. All right. A female Lyft and Uber driver for 2 years. All right.
Mm.
The other, please acknowledge me as a human being.
Oh, that shouldn't be too hard.
Oh, I got one for you. Get off the phone.
When you're driving.
I would love to acknowledge you as a human being and even engage you. One of my favorite things when I lived in Chicago was talking to the cabbie. Mm-hmm. And they were from all these different places.
Yeah,
and
I know. I'd love to find out where they're from.
And yeah, and that's when I found out that America had a citizenship lottery. And that many of them had come over here on citizenship that they had gotten via a lottery. And one or two guys said, I don't even know how I got in it.
Yeah.
And they did not have to give up the citizenship from the country of their origin. Mm. So now they have dual citizenship. They're riding around Chicago, driving cabs, making money. I loved talking to them. But by the time I moved to New York, all the cabbies were on their cell phones. From the time there were times when they were talking, I didn't even know they weren't talking to me. Because
me too.
I
know. They're on their phones a lot.
Oh,
it's really annoying.
You got a list?
I love that.
Please.
Yeah, I'll put my list together.
Get that clown on the phone.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm on my heels on that one. So his point was, please acknowledge me as a human being. Don't get in the car and not speak to me.
Oh, man. That's his thing, because I love talking to, because you knew they had all kinds of stuff to tell you.
Of course.
This was a woman that said this.
Oh,
Don't leave stuff in my car on purpose, only to call me back so I have to come back to you so you can ask me out on a date.
That is that's actually one of my Mad About Men segments was
it wasn't a
woman cab driver. It was a man Uber driver.
Uh-huh.
And the woman left her cell phone charger in the car intentionally so that she could call Uber and get in contact with the guy and, you know, let him know
social.
That she was interested in him and he was very flattered, but he was married.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Not that matters, but you know, it wasn't what
I want
she
to
was
say
looking
thank
for.
You to my wife
but yeah,
and my girlfriend.
Yes, and my wife and my girlfriend and my passenger.
Yes.
We love listening to your ridiculous arguments.
Who says this?
This is the cab driver.
He said, oh, he loves listening to the
Okay, so continue arguing and fighting in my vehicle.
Ridiculous. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right, no problem.
An example was there was a couple that got in the cab or the Lyft. I don't know what it was, or Uber. Mm. And they were arguing over whether someone that they knew whose wife recently died was dating too soon.
Oh.
And so they were just fighting about
That's
it
That's a
like
good
crazy.
Subject. How soon can you date after your spouse passes away?
Usually it's
well,
6 months.
I'm going to steal that.
Okay.
6 months is acceptable socially, but they say you should be alone for, which is kind of like, gosh, you could be alone for half your life. Like, you need so many months for every year you were together to heal.
Oh, well, all right.
And I'm like, wow, man, that could be a minute.
What's the time frame for going after the widow or widower?
Yeah, well,
this is the same question, I guess.
It's my understanding that it's customary to wait at least 6 months after your spouse passes before you get involved with another person.
But that's not.
But a lot of times the person is marrying another person in 6 months, which implies that there was a relationship going on before the spouse passed.
Maybe, maybe not. But it doesn't necessarily mean a sexual relationship. So Bernie Mac's wife married his best friend.
Did she?
Mm-hmm. So clearly there was a relationship. She knew him. He was her husband's best friend.
Yeah. Right. Happened to my father, actually.
Right. Really?
It happened to my father.
What do you mean?
One of his best friends passed.
Yeah.
6 months later, my mother passed. And that guy's widow was at my mother's funeral.
Okay.
That's kind of the connection to that whole thing. She wound up being not a very forthright woman.
Okay.
And they divorced a few years later. Oh. But she was on it. Right at the funeral.
Wow.
And they knew each other. I am sure there was nothing going on prior.
Right.
But it was circumstantial. They both lost their spouses. They both knew one another.
Right.
Had known each other for 40, 50 years, what have you. Yeah.
Mm.
Ah, you see?
It happens.
Okay. Eat when you get home, you animals.
Well, what about them? In New York, sometimes I'll get in the cab and they have like a full...
plate of
smelly, you know, very pungent curry or something. You know, there's it goes both ways. I don't want to smell that.
Maybe they're living in their car.
Well, why are you telling me not to eat in, you know?
Okay. All right.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. If they're living in their car, get out of the car, eat. I don't know, you know.
Take a minute.
Why are you giving a bad Middle Eastern accent?
I take it back.
No one ever tips us, though we'd love it if they did.
Oh, are you kidding?
Everybody tips.
Who is this
not
person?
On Uber. On Uber, you can't tip. So
that's
get
not
three.
True.
That is
you
not
can.
True.
No.
Yes, you can.
Not
don't tell
on
me
the app.
Oh, on the app, no. No. But, yeah, that's right. You can't tip on the app. But I always tip the Uber drivers.
Well, here's the thing. You have to offer three times in order for them to accept it.
What?
Per Uber's guidelines. Per,
get
per,
out of here.
Per,
oh, thank you.
Well, this is based on what this article said. If you offer one time, the person is supposed to say, no, we don't accept. If you second time, some other excuse. And third time you say, okay, no problem, I'll take your tip. So,
Well, I've never met an Uber driver who has not immediately accepted my tip.
So Uber knows the policy is being breached.
And a lot of people who take Uber say, you don't have to tip. Mm-hmm. But that I don't think that's true at all. I talk to the Uber drivers and they're like, we don't get those tips. They're supposed to get paid their tips, I think, annually from Uber.
Oh. No, there's no Uber tip. There's no way to put
Uber
tips on.
Uber is supposed to give the drivers... the tips, like the bonus, or there's some percentage of all of their rides throughout the year that they are meant to be meant to be tipped by Uber at the end of the year. And, you know, one Uber, and I don't know how true it is, but one Uber driver told me that they never get them. They never get those tips. Or they get them like 2 years later or 18 months later or something because it's, you know, part of the annual bonus thing or something. So, you know.
Profit sharing.
Scary. They have no problem taking on tips.
My understanding is Lyft, you can tip. And, of course, cabbies, you can tip. All right.
What else do they?
No life advice, please. Don't tell me I should get a corporate job or something like that.
Just get out of this cab and get on with your life. Wow.
We hate your music.
Yes. Well, we hate your music too. So let's.
That knife cuts both ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know a better route. So the.
Ooh. Ooh,
yes. As a matter of fact, I do.
Uh huh.
And sometimes.
And this is, and we, a limo driver is included in this conversation also. So you end up with people, passengers who are giving the driver suggestions on a better route to go. And it ends up where this person said, we typically know better than you do because this is what we do. We drive these routes all the time. But I really believe I know DC better than most. Mm. I've grown up here and I've got my back streets. People suggest that why do you go this way? This is, I've never even known of this street. So I feel like I know better, but I don't know. With other people hopping in the car, hey, maybe they don't.
Drivers ask, which way do you want to go? And I'll say, either I will have an opinion or I'll say, you know, whatever you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, now we have Waze. So I don't go anywhere without using my Waze app because that's going to give you the answer no matter who thinks what about how much you know the city or all your little shortcuts. Waze is going to get you there the fastest.
And
that's
the driver, the driver doesn't necessarily mind you being in the car longer. You know, particularly on a meter,
right?
Yeah. So I mean, all right. You want me to go this way? No problem. I'll sit in traffic all
exactly.
you want.
Exactly.
So, and the last is, this is not a clown car.
trying to get 25 people in the car.
Yes. If there's no seatbelt for that person, they cannot ride.
Wow.
Some people want to jam as many people in the car as absolutely possible, and that does not work for some drivers. So there you have it. How to treat cab drivers according to cab drivers.
And according to us too, because we had a lot to say about that.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, as riders, we get to weigh in. But we rarely hear from the cab drivers.
Indeed. Thank you, Frank.
I did good.
Yes.
Oh, very nice.
Marvelous.
Give that man a clap. Not the clap.
Right, not clap. A clap.
I wasn't going to touch it.
Not again.
So, Madeline.
Yes.
Tell us what. So, clearly, this book was a kind of catharsis, right?
Right.
And, okay, so one of the things I thought about on my way here was, wow, should it be that every woman writes her own memoir? Not necessarily for publication, but to really take a moment to reflect on her experience with men. And because you said early on, you talked about healing, and you said time doesn't necessarily heal all wounds. You have to heal yourself. And clearly in writing this book, or should I say, my assessment is that in writing this book, you did some healing.
Yes, I did. And I think it's really healthy for anyone, men or women, to have a diary or to write. And it doesn't necessarily have to be about your relationships. It can be about anything. You know, anything that's in your life, to write about it helps you to come to terms with it, see the humor in it. And the book was really originally... I say in the book that I was writing emails to my friend Chloe, who lives in LA. And
so this is Chloe of Chloe's,
Last Cock.
Last Cock.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Hashtag Chloe's Last Cock. So
pleasure to meet you, Chloe.
So I wrote emails to her, and you know, it was a way for me to kind of write a diary, but with somebody on the other end to read it and react in whatever way. So she reacted, you know, laughing, telling me that, your stuff is so funny that, you know, I'm going to start a blog with all of your emails. And I just thought, why would I let you start a blog
with my stories?
I'm going to do it.
Right.
And then originally the intention was to just have it be a bunch of different isolated stories that kind of relate to each other. And then I was just going to put together some short stories. But then it turned into this whole story of, you know, an actual flowing beginning to end thing. And for me, it was cathartic, and I worked with an editor who at times was like, yeah, that's funny, but why did you do that? And what's the point of that? And why on earth would you, you know, because I hadn't explained my behavior, you know, they were just isolated funny stories. So the editor really made me go deep and think about why was I in this relationship that I didn't even want to be in? And then I was cheating on the guy. And then what was the whole point of that? And what did I gain from that? So for me, she really helped me pull that part out. And it was cathartic. But yes, to answer your question, I think writing is a terrific way to get it all out. You know, no matter what you do with it, it's like writing a diary or a journal or, you know, anything.
Sure, sure. And were you surprised? I'm thinking about in, I want to say the final scene, because sometimes it felt like I was watching it.
Oh, that's good to know, because, you know, I'm actually creating a TV show out of it.
Oh.
I'm working with a production company who had the same reaction. They were like, oh, this is like Sex in the City and all your stories. We should make a TV show out of this.
Yeah,
so,
you could definitely see some of it. So there's the baby shower. And at the baby shower, there's the new mother-to-be. And there are all these close friends, women. And one of them just happens to say, my husband's an asshole.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, you've got a choir of women who are chiming in. And the thing that I thought was interesting was you said no judgment.
Yeah.
No, just like
understanding among these women.
Right.
And it was like not even nobody blinked an eye. Like, yep, my husband's an asshole, but he's my asshole and I love him, but he's an asshole, you know.
Was my wife there?
I'll never tell.
I'm not going to say what I'm thinking.
Could have been anybody.
Part of the conversation.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So... But I think about that, and I think about a study I read some years ago that it was called Micro Trends, and they talked about how more and more women were choosing to remain single, and so I was wondering if after being a part of that conversation, not to mention your own experiences, whether you have come to the. I didn't get the impression that you had come to some place of feeling like you would not marry again.
I feel like. That I may not marry again. I don't really know, but I think I said that too. Like maybe I am better off. I don't know.
But
I don't
it
know
doesn't
the
sound
answer.
Like it doesn't sound like some line not, in the sand you've
no,
drawn. To
I don't
say.
Think anybody. I don't think I could ever. I'm not the type of person that would draw a line in the sand because you never. Because then you're just closing yourself off to possibilities.
Right.
So, you know, it was the observation from the baby shower and all these women, like you said, the chorus of women saying my husband is an asshole, made me think maybe I'm better off. Or, you know, maybe there is some asshole out there who would make me happy and then I could be the same way and saying like, well, he's an asshole, but he's my asshole and I know how to deal with it. And so, I don't know. There's definitely not a line in the sand, but I'm not out specifically looking for one thing or the other.
Sure.
Because, you know, again, you close yourself off to possibilities.
Right. And I think it's important to note a conversation I had recently. We talked about how when you're choosing Mr. Perfect, you might want to choose his challenges also. You might want to consider choosing the challenges you think you could put up with.
Right.
And often we're so busy focusing on how awesome we want the guy to be that we never consider that he has to have a balance.
A bank balance.
He's
Or those challenges don't appear for another 10 or 15 years.
Right. So,
by the way, I just wanted to congratulate you, Madeline, because when you mentioned Sex and the City, that was a show that I didn't religiously watch.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did, it was almost like I'm looking into the mind of a woman
women
and the variety of scenarios. So this book will give men an idea of what could. The other thing is, almost redundantly, knowing that you work in music and entertainment, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
So these are the tales of. But the other thing is, there's a classification of book that many have written and read. To start with Erica Jong, but there was a woman named Pamela Del Barr who was a groupie and wrote her tales of promiscuity on the road, what have you, the plaster casters and things like that. I don't know if your book fits into that category. But it's voyeuristic for fans to know and to hear of stories like this.
Well, my book has nothing to do with the music business. It's my own personal journey. But it is a look for men into, you know, what goes through women's minds. It's also, it's kind of like it's not quite as racy, or I guess is the Pamela DeBar thing. I don't really remember that one, but I know it was controversial at the time. So it's all of those things, I think. I also found that gay men actually respond really well to the book because, often their minds are a little bit more open and there's no judgments and, you know, they can be, it's fun. Like, oh, girl, you're so crazy, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I think it can appeal to everyone. And it was a really big, it was a big move for me to post it on my personal Facebook and to sort of come out of the closet in a sense and say, like, all right, so I did it and here it is. And you're all going to look at me differently. Everyone I've worked with and known over the years, you're going to now know things about me that you didn't know before. So,
right.
It was a little brave.
Yeah, a big time brave.
Yeah.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with a mom that many would like to have fun with. And the author of Mad About Men, a memoir, Madeline Morgan. Madeline, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
Mad About Men is the name of my book. You can find me on madaboutmen.com, or the book is available everywhere that you buy a book. Amazon, it's Kindle. I did an audiobook that Nancy listened to.
Yes.
iBooks, wherever you read your books.
Nice.
Thanks.
Along today's journey, we've discussed how men invest their resources in a potential relationship, or they don't. Cabby decorum. And being just simply mad about men. And all that encompasses. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thank you to Jeff Newman, my engineer. And thank you to my guest, Madeline Morgan. You've been great.
Thank you.
I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr. That's M.R. Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe, so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.